Okay, hello people. Well, I stopped talking, shut up. This is the final show of the evening. So, I shall introduce the people, some of whom you've seen, some of whom you haven't, right? Far end, Joe Ressington. Big cheer for Joe. First of all, because he's here, but secondly, because he organised all of this. Well done, Joe Ressington. Co-host of Linux Action News. Right? What you'll discover here is there are a bunch of podcasts where, you know, this is about podcasting in the UK, right? And you've got a bunch of people who draw their stuff entirely from the UK. The Ubuntu podcast, Linux Voice, so on and so forth. What we are is representatives of podcasts which are global. So, Joey's here from Linux Action News, along with Chris, who's in the States.
Yes.
Yes. Dave Megas-Nichols. Big chip, Dave.
Mega Slippers, come on.
Mega Slippers, yes, okay. And you are co-host of...
Geek News Radio.
Geek News Radio with...
An angry man called Fab.
Yes, with Fab Social, who is in Germany. And Marius Quarbeck, who, I have to say, is not someone who's in the UK and then the rest of his co-hosts are in Germany. He's from Germany as well. Came over here just for this. Big cheer for Marius. Co-host of the Ubuntu Fun podcast, which is ubuntufun.de, I believe. Yes, okay.
Speak to the mic, dude.
Speak to the mic. I'm Stuart Langridge, I'm from Bad Voltage, which is apparently not quite as good as Linux Voice, it turns out. Incidentally, though, the Linux Voice people are not here, so fuck them. Anyway, we tossed around some ideas about what we wanted to do with this show, and then a bunch of people said, well, we've just got questions for you, really, and you're on different podcasts and so on. So we thought, we'll take our lives into our hands and ask the internet what they want to know.
That could possibly go wrong.
Each of us mentioned on our existing podcast that we've got questions, and lots of people on the internet suggested questions. So, would a representative of the internet please hand me the list of questions? Thank you very much, Joe Borg. Okay, so what's going to happen here is we're going to address the questions to the panel. I get to be moderator and occasionally chip in.
Hang on, Stuart, you've totally buried the lead, man. Let's look at the list of questions.
Oh, sorry, yes, I should point out, check this out, laminated. Right, none of this writing on the back of someone else's cards. I know you've got a laminated thing.
2 hours ago.
Dude, you always have laminated stuff. You're super organised, Radio 4. This is a really big deal for us. Well, we have this laminated. Look, check this fucker out. Look. So... yes, I did bury the lead. Sorry about that. Joe had it laminated. Well done, Joe. So, we had a bunch of questions, and I will address them to the team. So, first question was, if you wrote a really popular piece of free software, which ISIS or Donald Trump or pick some demon, they used it and publicly recommended it, would it change how you license or work on the project going forward? So, Dave, we'll have you first.
I would immediately shit my pants. I think there are bigger questions than how you'd license it. At that point, you're picking someone who has enemies, and they've just announced that they use your thing. You are now fucked. So don't like, maybe not the KGB in Donald Trump's case, but
ooh,
yeah, the FSB or GCHQ or some other person's going to come knocking at your door because presumably you put this on GitHub under your name. They're going to say, hello, Dave. Would you like to put some back doors in because we're the Conservatives?
But hang on a sec. Isn't any publicity good publicity? So if someone like Trump or ISIS or whatever uses your free software or, in my case, publicly endorses podcasts that I do, then I would be really happy about that. I would be like, yes, this complete and utter bastard listens to us, but you don't have to be a complete and utter bastard to listen to us. So it's great publicity, and I think that it would be, you know, say Trump uses Debian, or more likely,
Arch.
More likely, Trump's ancient Samsung phone that he was using for ages, like, if it turned out that he'd actually been using Lineage on there, then I think that would be great publicity for Lineage. And it's bad publicity, but it still puts that name of Lineage into the wider press.
Okay, Maris. Is any publicity good publicity?
Well, I've actually been in the situation from one of my tools. Have been recently become quite popular, and I'm definitely not sure because it's it's reusing some free and open source software, and sometimes that license changes or other stuff changes, and some all of a sudden people start yelling at me because I'm apparently licensing my software wrong. And yeah, I would be definitely be scared.
Okay, we do have a roving microphone. So if you've got thoughts, feel free to stick your hand up if you want to. Right, loads of you. Okay, I'm not necessarily going to get to all of you all the time, but oh, it was your question, was it? Well, we did get, as I say, a number of questions, and some of them we decided to keep, and some of them we decided to reject. Now, I believe one of the ones we had from Mr. Pope was, how is Babby formed? So,
how get girl pregnant?
That was you?
Yeah.
Bastard.
correct me if I'm wrong, but haven't you got two kids? Okay, question.
So, well, just a comment on that, on what Joe just said. I don't think public sentiment works like that. I think if people see you associated with, say, ISIS, the bad side of what you prefer not to be associated with, they're going to remember that association, whether it's because they don't understand the details of that or it's just too complicated to remember.
I'm getting the word Cody.
I am a programmer.
No, Cody, the Xbox Media Center, you know, that was, that recently in the last year or so has had a lot of negative press attention, because even though that's a free software project that just plays anything you throw at it, their name has been dragged through the mud because of basically the right-wing media have associated them with piracy, which, let's face it, is fair, because who's using Cody with anything other than pirated shit? But some people,
three people,
but yeah, that's a prime example of that, where you can associate this thing that is otherwise totally neutral with a negative thing. And I suppose, yeah, if you associated something negative, I think Trump maybe is the wrong example, but something like ISIS, which I don't think anyone agrees with, whereas with Trump you've got sort of half of America curiously. But anyway, with ISIS, if they used something like Lineage, then that probably would be bad publicity for them. So I see what you mean.
Okay, go on then, Mr. Pope.
So the reason why I asked this question was like open source developers, but partly things like Telegram. Like they get, you know, news reports that say ISIS are using Telegram to do their naughty communications, and Telegram have to actively put out press releases to say, don't believe what you read in the media. They have to counteract that. So if you're a software developer, it's not that all publicity is good publicity. Sometimes you have to, you know, fight back against that, in inverted commas, bad publicity.
Part of the question you've got to think about there, then, is it's quite possible that ISIS are actually genuinely using Telegram, right? And it's a bit disingenuous to go, no, they're not really, don't believe what you read in the media. What you ought to be saying is, but that's what we're for. We're an IM system. Anyone can use it, right? We don't discriminate. But then you get into a whole bunch of free speech things and so on and so forth. Oh, we have another comment, I do believe.
Pretty much the same as Pope is. ISIS is using Facebook Live to conduct auctions of captured Yazidi women.
Yeah, so at that point, you get back to the fairly standard, we're just a carrier for information thing. And we could change that. We could say, okay, it's a bad thing to do this, and we're going to limit what you do. But that sort of thing's got a lot of repercussions for other things. That ties into the whole net neutrality debate. Do you want your ISP deciding what you're allowed to ship up and down, or is it just bytes? You know, so there's a much larger kind of free speech aspect of this. The fact that it's technology is essentially irrelevant, right? The Facebook people would say, well, they probably use pens as well. Are we going to ban those? So I think there's a larger picture. What do you guys think, Dave?
You also have to balance it against potentially all the good that your tool does. Surely, if your tool is being used by someone, it is useful. So the one that is the bad one that everyone's going to pick on because that's the interesting story is going to seem big, but what about the thousands, millions of people that are using your tool for good? And I don't know how you do that moral maths. So I would just cry.
Yeah, I don't think you can do the moral maths of it. I think you've just got to do what is ethically right to you. And if what is ethically right to you is free software and open source, then you just have to accept the bad things that may come of that. If a lot of good's going to come of it and a little bit of bad, but that's freedom, isn't it? Freedom to do good as well as bad.
But the question actually is, looking back at it, it's, if it was your piece of software, would it change how you work on it? Yes. I mean, I am sure that Voltaire is prepared to die in a ditch for your right to build software which is used by people you don't like, and that's what the free software definition demands, and that's really great and honourable and so on. But equally, I can see me thinking, maybe might not work on that this weekend. Is that a reasonable thing to think, or am I some kind of terrible coward?
Or you backdoor it yourself and become Batman.
Anything at all which ends with "and I become Batman" is good from my point of view. Okay, so we'll move on to the next question. Well, this is something of a change. So, question here, I don't know who it was from, I can possibly guess. What would it take for you to change to using the Solus distro?
It not being complete and utter shit.
You know you're only saying that because Ikey isn't here, you big chicken.
Yeah, if he was here, then I would tell him that I was using it already.
I feel there's a horse's head in your bed when you get home.
Yeah.
So, a serious question for you, Chats. Maris, have you used Solus?
Yes, I've been using Solus for the last month, and I know it's ironically because I'm wearing a... Well, actually, not that one.
You're wearing a t-shirt with Maris.
Which says Ubuntufun.de. Well, yeah, but actually the t-shirt says Ubuntufun.de, but I'm still really like Solus, but I have to agree with what Joe has said in one of the last Late-Night Linux episodes, if Budgie becomes less shit.
Well, before we go on, is there anyone here who doesn't know what Solus is? let's make Joe do this, could be hilarious. Joe, could you give a small description of what Solus is, please?
Solus is an operating system based on the Linux kernel and mostly GNOME stuff, built from scratch by a fellow called Ikey Doherty, who happens to be a co-host of Late Night Linux. And it's not like most of the distros that you'll see on DistroWatch, which are Ubuntu with a different wallpaper and XFCE or something like that. It is genuinely built from scratch. And it's a small team doing it. And so as a result of that, it's, some people call it boutique. Ikey would be a bit annoyed by that. But the bottom line is that it doesn't have a huge company behind it, which is a good thing and a bad thing. You've got Ubuntu, which has got a huge company behind it with
huge.
Okay, well, they did just sack like half their employees, but
it wasn't that big beforehand, man.
Well, you know, Oh yeah, Graham works from as well, doesn't he? But anyway, Solus is completely independent, and it in a few weeks we'll have one full time developer working on it, Ikey, and it's good in some ways, and it's. Has some issues in other areas. For example, if you want to run a KDE desktop, if you've got an Ubuntu base or an Arch base or a Debian base or whatever, or a Fedora base, if you just install KDE, it's going to work pretty well. Whereas with Solus, you need to have KDE is not going to work right now, put it that way.
Okay. So Maris, you've been using it. Dave, have you used Solus? Have you used any Linux at all recently, or are you just still a Windows person?
I've used Solus. I spun up a VM. It's all right. If you gave it to my mum, it would just be, oh, that's Linux.
Yeah, you don't see there's anything particularly differentiates it from any of the other stuff.
I'm aware of Ikey's kind of philosophy behind building it and the cool stuff behind the back end, but ultimately it still makes a thing that doesn't kind of work all the time.
Okay.
When I use Linux, I'm kind of used to that. So.
What would it take for you to switch to it?
AAA games?
Yeah. Brain hemorrhage from the audience. No. I don't know. It's, what would Linux have to do to make me use it all the time on a thing with a screen?
Right. So it's not moving to Solus. It's moving to Linux at all, and then you might just flip a coin or something when you do. When
oh, yeah. Like, if there was a Solus server edition, I'd be... probably okay. End up using it, but you know.
Joe, have you actually tried Solus?
Yes.
What did you think, briefly?
Briefly, I think that the underlying plumbing of it is absolutely excellent. I think that it is one of the fastest package managers that I've used. I think that updates and installations of software are absolutely brilliant. And I don't care for Budgie because I don't think it's finished, and Ikey would accept that. But if you install the Mate edition of it...
Woohoo! One single cheer for Mate.
then I think that it's... No, but seriously, if you install the Mate version of Solus, you've got, for me, a perfectly usable desktop. I'd rather it be XFCE, but Mate's a close second, really.
Okay, so most of you in the audience said you'd heard of it. How many of you have tried it? Well, loads. Okay, of those people who've tried it, how many of you are still using it? Not that many. Have any of you got some brief thoughts on why, when you tried it, you didn't stick with it?
So I actually only tried it just to see if it was suitable to give to my parents. That was the entire reason that I used it, was to work out, is this suitable for me to give to someone that isn't really that technical? Well, I say isn't really that technical, isn't technical at all, asks me how to send an email. And I can give that to my parents and they just get on with it. They just use it as if it was Windows and they don't really know any different.
So they're using Solus right now?
Yeah, both of them.
Excellent.
That's installed on the three computers that they mainly use around the house. They do still have an iPad, but
that's fine.
That's it, really.
Excellent. Right. Jesse at the back?
Yeah, so I had an issue with not having any PPAs or There You Are. So I stopped using it.
So software availability, essentially.
Right. So your problem was you were looking for things which weren't part of the Solus distribution or package for Solus or whatever. But that's what happens with every boutique distro, right? Not that it's a distro, it's an operating system. You've got exactly the same problem that all the other ones have, that you've only got half a dozen apps because you haven't got the large community who've been busy packaging things up for the last 20 years or whatever.
Yeah, for me, Solus, I thought it worked very well when I ran it on my laptop. I wanted something that ran as well on the server as a desktop. I'm a developer, so I needed something that was equivalent, and Solus doesn't quite have that yet.
Okay, yep. I don't think it's ever planned to have that, is it? It's desktop OS. As far as I'm aware, it's not planned on... They're not interested in it being a server thing, which is
have
fine.
No idea about whether that may or may not happen in the future, Stuart.
Okay.
Perhaps... Who knows what might happen in a few weeks when he leaves Intel?
Very well. Okay.
Let me add one thing to this.
Yes, go.
Because you've mentioned the software availability is an issue. And what really would help me switch full time to Solus would be if it would support SnapD instead of Letpack. Because I'm not doing it
you
just for you.
You are such an Ubuntu shill, honestly.
I actually have first of all, yes, that's correct. I'm running a blog about it. Second of all, I'm actually developing software in SnapD and packaging it as Snap. So it's really an issue because just the other day I was just trying to debug and one of my software that someone reported and I was basically not able to run it on Solus and I was actually really close to port it to Flatpak. But then I realized that the documentation about Flatpak was even more shit than on Snap.
Being clear here, if you're looking to be on the server, then there's no point in being Flatpak because Flatpak doesn't do server stuff. It's desktop only and designed that way.
Yeah, but can I just say
I spent 12 hours having a fight about this on Twitter like 2 days ago.
But when it comes to Snap, can I just say, Marius, that I try to install Magic Device Tool via Snaps on Ubuntu 16.04, Ubuntu 16.04, and it didn't work. And so then I just cloned the Git repository and it worked perfectly.
Person you want to talk to there?
You created an issue for it on GitHub.
Yeah, right. What I'm saying to you is that it's without branching this conversation off into new packaging formats, none of them are ready.
Please don't do that.
Yeah, I agree.
But none of them are completely ready yet. And okay, one or the other might have potential, but right now, none of them are mainstream ready. They're ready for testing and ready for enthusiasm from people in the corner of the room, but they're just not ready.
No, that's fair.
Agree that it's not ready, but basically to come back to the question, what really would make me switch to Solus would be SnapD support. So that's basically my answer.
Well, yeah, fair enough.
No, that's a good call. Question there.
As a tangent, Solus is actually on Ikey's home server as a hidden project. So that's a clue if it may happen in future.
Ooh, secret insider information. Excellent. Okay, next question. From the internet. you are stuck on a desert island with a general purpose computer and provisions to last 100 years. Your computer runs Windows 10S. How long before you use the lithium battery to start a fire?
I refute the question. How can a Windows 10S computer be a general purpose PC?
Ooh! This is very true, actually. Since we had the solar question, have any of you tried Windows 10S?
Why would I?
Really? You can't have it at all? I thought.
No.
Oh, hang on.
I think it's only on the Surface laptops, which aren't out yet. So you can't download Windows 10S and actually install it. So you can't try it.
Can I say something that might shock the audience here? I think Windows 10S is a brilliant idea. I think that, as far as Microsoft are concerned, if you're going to have an operating system like Windows, which is just so terribly shit and so vulnerable to all of, you know, if you basically can install anything you want, then obviously the operating system is going to grind to a halt after a while. If you completely lock it down like Chrome OS and say that you can only install things from a certain, well, repository, for want of a better word, then that's basically what we've been doing in Linux for the last 20 years. And so if you can collate that app store or whatever they want to call it to be only stuff that they trust from the likes of Adobe and whatever, then you're pretty much going to have a better time computing than if you've got the freedom to install whatever you want, if your operating system is built on sand like Windows is.
Yes, I mean, it's basically a Chromebook, right? The intention of the thing they're trying to do.
Yeah, but it's a Chromebook plus actual applications rather than just a web browser.
I was actually all in favor of Windows 10S. I thought it was a great idea. And then they said, okay, it's going to be stuff in the store. And I thought, great, because what I can do is I can get this basically Chromebook thing on their very pretty hardware and then just install Ubuntu, which is in the store. Right?
Yeah,
and then
that's proper
see
Ubuntu.
That? Why isn't it proper Ubuntu?
Well, it's the...
It's a complete Ubuntu user space. If I came around and snuck in the Windows kernel underneath your Ubuntu installation, you'd have no fucking idea I'd done it. Right?
Yeah, but desktop Linux is... desktop Linux. It's not a command line for most people, which is what isn't even available on Windows 10S. But what you're talking about there is like you thought you could have the subsystem.
Yes.
Essentially.
Yeah. The point is that you can't, right? It's in the store, but they've said they won't let you install command line applications onto Windows 10S. So that at that point, I suddenly thought, oh, that's really disappointing. So I can't get the nice Microsoft hardware.
Okay.
Comment at the back.
Part of the problem with that, okay, is even though they have a store, they still have the same vulnerabilities in the software. So Ars Technica did a, you know, write-up about this, basically saying that they employed a hacker, okay, right, to see if they could hack Windows S, okay, right, for, you know, malware and, you know, ransomware products. And the way they did it, okay, is basically they downloaded, okay, Word from the App Store, okay, and they got Word to look at a trusted source for macro exploits on one of their Word documents. And so someone wrote a document, okay, right, had a macro exploit, okay, that still was, accessible by the Word app, okay, to basically break the system. So even though it was installed over a share instead of over the internet, okay, it basically means, okay, right, the Word still had this exploit, okay, right, for macros.
Yeah, it took two hours to do
it's
this.
Like, it's like, basically, making a silk purse out of sow's ear, right? Is the point of, you know, the Windows software, okay, right, is not good anyway, so regardless of whether it's installed by an app, okay, or whether it's installed by the internet, okay, it's still no good.
Understood. Yes. No. Okay. I mean, and that's a reasonable thing. How does everyone feel in general? Do people think that Windows 10S is just a terrible idea? Does anyone think it's a good idea?
Yes, I think it's a brilliant idea from a business perspective. I don't think it's a good idea that I want to buy a device with it, but I think from Microsoft's perspective, they want to make money, they want to sell machines. I think it's a bloody brilliant idea.
Okay, comment from down here.
Yeah, Joe was talking about WSL not being desktop Linux. I don't think WSL is meant to be desktop Linux.
Of course.
Right, because desktop Linux, depending on who you talk to, is somewhere between 1.7 and 2.4% of desktop users, right? WSL in the DevOps space, in the server space, in the cloud space, the people that work in the terminal every day, we are dominant there. We are the 98%. And that's the market that WSL is looking to serve.
Yep, no. Oh, go on.
So, unfortunately, you stumbled upon yet another question I asked by the internet. And the reason I asked this, and the reason I said general purpose computer running Windows 10S, was because imagine you're on a desert island, you've got a computer. If it was running Linux, probably it would come with a compiler, probably would come with some man pages, probably would come with an awful lot that you could actually do something with to avoid the absolute boredom of 100 years on a desert island. But a Windows 10 laptop is effectively a Chromebook and is completely moribund without an internet connection, without a store.
If it came with Endless OS, then you'd have most of Wikipedia to read.
You would. You'd have loads of stuff in Endless. That's the point of Endless, right?
Windows 10S is probably going to come with Candy Crush installed. Someone will get well good at Candy Crush.
100 years on a desert island, you'd have almost as high a score as my mum, who plays it all the time. Yes, question here.
I just wonder if the issue with Windows 10S is just, it's going to be like Windows RT, where it never succeeds because people's perception of it is, it's Windows, I can download random XE from the internet and run it. And they're going to expect that because it looks like Windows 10, and they expect it to function as such, when in fact it won't.
There is kind of a consideration. There was a thing called Windows Reduced Media Edition or something, when they were commanded to unbundle Windows Media Player or Windows Media Server or something. And so they put this out, EU regulation, I think, words to that effect. And no one bought this thing because it felt like you were getting a kind of a cut down experience and people didn't like it. And yeah, that's exactly the problem. The question is whether people say, I want a rival to a Chromebook. Oh, here's a Windows version, which is more familiar to me. Or whether people say, I want a cheap Windows laptop. Oh, here's this one, but doesn't run anything. And that's pure out and out marketing, I think, on the Microsoft people's part. Now, they are supernaturally bad at marketing, but they, in recent years, they've started to get better. You've got things like the Surface stuff, which is looking quite attractive, and that turny wheel thing, which every designer I know says, oh, that's cool. When's the Mac one coming out? So it could be interesting to see whether they actually manage to make a success of it. Because Microsoft are definitely on the downturn, trending very much downwards at the moment. There's a question of, can they arrest that? And a question of, do we want them to?
Just to forget, or not to forget, rather, is the fact that if it's not x86 and it's Windows, there's no guarantee they're allowed to have a different OS on there.
Yes, if you're running a Windows device, which is ARM or something like that, they can and will lock down the boot process and you can't get around it cryptographically.
It almost sounds like this is their 2017 version of Windows Phone trying to...
Yeah, but well, Windows Phone...
Let me add something to this, Stuart.
Yes.
The old versions of Windows Phone.
Yeah, I agree
when
with...
they were failing.
I agree with comparing it with another Microsoft product that was basically shit. But still, even the marketing team from Microsoft didn't thought that it would... That Windows 10S would be anything useful for the target user base or user core base by making it upgradable to a proper Windows 10 version. So they have thought about it somehow. But somehow they also have seen some kind of user base who could actually make use of it, which is the part that I can see.
Yep, that's fair. One more here.
Just a question about it, because I'm not sure, but do you have to pay Microsoft a ton of money to get your app certified for Windows 10S?
As far as I'm aware, no. I mean, I'm happy to be corrected about this, but as far as I'm aware, as long as your app is in the store and it's not a command line app, it's okay. So you have to get it in the store, but the requirements to get in the store are no more onerous than they are to get in the Android store, the iOS store, or the Mac App store, or whatever.
Stuart, can I just... Far be it from me to tell you how to host the show that I totally put you in charge of, but why the fuck are we still talking about Microsoft?
Because it's interesting. Next question.
to answer the question, I'd use it as a shovel.
So this is something which came up earlier, but I thought it was worth revisiting. Someone asked, given the fact that most young people learn to use an Android or an Apple phone at an early age, how do you convince them to write free software when they get older? Dave?
Because everyone puts their shit on GitHub. We don't have to convince them to do it. I think that's the way people are learning. Like, as previously mentioned, code clubs. Like, the moment you learn Git as a person who wants to take code slightly more seriously, you're going to find GitHub or GitLab, and you're going to share your code. You might not license it properly. You might fuck that up, but it's going to be there. You're going to copy other people. I don't think it's really a problem we need to tackle.
Oh, okay, Maris? I completely don't agree with that, but we'll get on with that.
So let's just say, well, basically, my first smartphone was a real shitty Android phone followed by another shitty Android phone, and then basically my first kind of real Linux or GNU slash Linux, whatever you want to call it, phone was an Ubuntu phone. Oh. And that's...
No, Wahoo.
I just want to make clear, I'm not saying this for police amusement.
Seriously, I really like the idea, but no Wahoo now.
How did it work out for you?
Let me... Shut up. I had a point, actually. No, starting using an Ubuntu phone, I've also got interested in developing apps and getting into all the community stuff, and that's basically what got me into all the open source stuff. So that, it wasn't the starter, but it was definitely something that brought me deeper into the Linux community and all of the other stuff. So that's definitely something to get younger people interested in projects that they probably care about and, make them contribute.
Joe, what do you think? How do we get young people involved or encourage people, the next generation of people, to write free software?
Shall I be characteristically negative?
Shock me. Go for it, Joe.
Well, look, most young people, their first experience of computing is a smartphone or a tablet, and they maybe play with a Raspberry Pi. And I think that, well, let me be uncharacteristically positive and say that when they get into code, the small minority of them that can be asked to actually progress into writing code beyond what they're made to do at school, the default is to have that code shared with people. They don't know about licenses. They don't know about permissive versus copyleft or any. They don't give a shit about that. They share their Python code and improve it and have the sort of free software by default, which is something that Stallman has talked about. He said that proprietary software is sort of relatively new, because when he started, it was all about, there wasn't an idea that you would protect your source code. Everyone just shared what they were doing. So I think that young people who get into coding, which I think is a minority. I know that the government and the educational institutions and the Raspberry Pi Foundation would like to think that all young people are getting into it. But I think the reality is that it is the same minority who are sitting in this room as it ever has been. Popey's shaking his head and saying no, but okay, maybe it's a larger minority than before.
No, so at my wife's school where she teaches, they recently got their GCSEs doing, and they were writing their ICT stuff. Now, typically, I would have expected that to be use Word, use Excel, use PowerPoint to create stuff. But no, they're writing code. It's actually changing now, and the GCSEs are actually write code. It's not. How to use Word.
I just heard I'm a teacher, so I'm going to pass the microphone.
I'm a computer science teacher, and excellent. Yeah, I teach Python, for example, and just
yay.
Been doing.
Yay! Is that all got one of the cards?
Most of my students are not really interested. Some of them, there's a small group that are fascinated.
Yeah, who are going to end up? In 20 years.
Yeah, yeah. But for the rest of them, it's just, why am I learning this? Or what? I'm not interested. Why am I having to do this hard work?
But you could say the same about algebra. Like, they would say the same about...
They're rubbish at maths.
Right.
Yeah, but the ones who are interested in it, are they interested in sharing it with each other and learning from each other?
Yeah, that's true. They are. Yeah, they do. They're like a nerdy group.
Yeah, and yet they don't know about licenses, presumably. For them, it's just the default behavior is to share it.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think that is the positive that we can take away from this, is that although it's not defined and sort of, encapsulated in these licenses and these, legal frameworks, the default is I write something, I share it with my friend, he makes it better, he gives it to me, I make it a bit better, we give it to someone else to make it better, and we have something that is bloody brilliant as a result.
Something that was said earlier.
So to bring this full circle, okay, right? This is going back 20 years, okay, or so to my youth, okay, right? When you know, we had the revolution, if you're right, of personal computing in the UK, which is based around the, you know, BBC and, you know, the Spectrum, okay, right? It was all about sharing the code. It was all about swapping games with people. It was all about learning out how to poke things and peek things.
Yeah, whether it was copying it out of a magazine, yeah. you could do that, and but you could change it if you were so inclined.
That's exactly what's inspired me, okay, right, to be a hacking kind of person, because it started off, okay, when I was very young, playing games and learning how to code stuff and looking at Z80 assembler and stuff like that. And the difference between now and then was that people have unlearned a lot of this stuff. Okay, it's all been abstracted away, okay, right, by, you know, programming language and everything else. Okay, but it's also been, you know, abstracted away by programs. So instead of actually learning how, you know, a word processor works, okay, right, you just learn how to use Word. And it's one of those things, okay, right, that I think is coming full circle with the open source kind of, you know, ecosystem, where more people are being aware of the idea that they can actually dial down to very low concepts, okay, right, of computing and communications. That was basically, you know, something that was very new and novel, okay, right, in my era.
It is reassuring, I think, to see that there was a point a few years ago when people were saying, you know, real computers are going to basically go away. What we're going to have is everyone's just going to have tablets. They're going to be consumption devices. No one's going to really understand how to write software at all. And the universe responded by creating the Raspberry Pi and the Microbit and so on and so forth. So it does seem like the cosmic balance does correct itself a bit.
And I think my kind of experience echoes that. So I was at school in like the, you know, 2005, 2006, when actually we were just being taught, here is Macromedia Dreamweaver.
Right.
You make a web page. This is what you get. You write a Word document. You make a spreadsheet. And since I've left school, I've kind of found people, you know, getting into Raspberry Pis or the BBC Microbit. And I'm probably amongst the minority of people of, you know, when I went to school where actually I had an interest in the other stuff, whereas everyone else was like, why the fuck am I making this web page in Dreamweaver? What's the point? Probably when I did my GCSE IT. Like,
I think when you did your GCSEs was the last time anybody used Dreamweaver, wasn't it?
So Joe seemed to be labouring the point about kids today not understanding the minutiae of licensing and the relevance of the different licenses. I couldn't give a toss about the different licenses for free software. All I care, the central value I get from the free software licenses is it enables me to collaborate with people. And if that's what kids are naturally drawn to, then it really doesn't matter what license or public domain or whatever they're using. It's the fact that they're collaborating and working together that is far more important, because they'll find the open source licenses by way of that work in the first place.
I totally agree with that, but at the same time, if they just put their code out there with no license, then it is proprietary by default. And so I think that it is important to educate them, not all kids, because not all kids are going to be interested in that, as the teacher here was telling us. As I suspected, only minority of kids are going to be interested. But those minority who are interested and have this mindset of sharing by default, I think that at some point in their education, they need to be taught about licensing, because otherwise they're going to just think that you can share it by default, but then the reality hits that unless you put a free software open source license on it, on your code, then it's proprietary by default, and then it's all locked down.
Ben.
At the risk of agreeing with Joe here, when I were a lad and all this were fields and I was at school, we had scientific calculators. That's what we programmed on. I think it was BASIC, but to be honest, I can't really remember. But it was an interpreted language, and you typed stuff in and you ran it. And you couldn't lock it down. That was how it was. And we shared it around with these little jack-to-jack cables to share it between the scientific calculators. And, you know, we shared code and we improved on it and all that. And everyone I shared code with is now working for proprietary people and doing their code proprietary stuff. And I'm not bitter about it. It's just the way it's gone. You know, they do it to support their families in the way a lot of people do, but it doesn't get embedded in that. You know, you don't automatically become a free software advocate just because you shared by default when you were young.
Presumably licensing was never brought up.
Of course not. You couldn't do anything other than that because people just copied.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the point. It's the kind of the sharing thing. I mean, I don't know how much that has changed from when I was a kid, sort of 30 years ago, to when, say, you were kids, which is much more recent than that. Did you have, when you were at school, a kind of a sharing culture? We had, you know, you copy games around. Did that kind of thing happen?
Well, there was no culture around it, basically. I've really just got started with the Ubuntu project and the Ubuntu community. So, and there obviously were people like-minded around me and which brought me into all of this stuff. So, in that example, I'm not the best example for that case.
Dave?
I didn't really do software at school.
Oh, really?
No.
Ah, okay. So, doesn't really apply then.
Very similar, like, we learned the bullshit, kind of make a web page. Do databases.
Do Word, do Excel. And it does seem like things have improved quite a lot since then. You know, there's been quite a shift back in. There was certainly a bit where you had a couple of big corporations saying the job of people to learn about computers is to learn how to use our software and that's it. There was a thing called the ECDL, the European something driving license. And you look at it and it said, okay, you need to, and they were very careful not to mention any actual brand names. So it was kind of, you will learn to use a word processor and do the following things. And they were clearly things that only existed in Word, right? And you're like, this is clearly just a learn to drive Word driving license. But things have improved quite a lot now. And like I say, you've got things like the microbit and so on.
I was just going to say that I kind of agree with Joe that, like, you need to teach people about licensing at some point, but it also really makes me really sad that you need to teach, like, 16-year-old kids copyright law.
But that's the reality of the situation.
Yeah, it is. I know way too much about US copyright law. I really wish I didn't, but I do. And
Stuart, can I just chip in that we've got
nine
minutes, so we could do a lightning round, maybe.
Yeah, no. I am aware of this. I was just about to pick up the bit of paper. And so, well, do any of you have any really burning questions? We've probably got time for two more quick questions.
I wouldn't say burning. I'd just like to do a follow-up with the fact that I think the discussion that you've just had is all education on the teenagers. What about the education on the teachers that are teaching the teenagers? People say that we bring our children into a world that they don't want to do. Why did we do this? Well, hold on. What about the fact that we're here to teach them that it is a good world and that they are the people that can do better.
Can I jump in with that? And can I say something a bit controversial when it comes to teachers? And I would say, basically, fuck the Raspberry Pi Foundation. They can fuck off. Because, well, no, what they have done is they have spread computing to the masses via teachers and children and not. And they have built their entire empire and their OBEs and all the rest of it.
Sorry, they've spread affordable computing. They haven't spread a philosophy.
No, exactly. What they've spread is computing to the masses and to children and teachers and all the rest of it, based on Debian, poorly configured with all the rest of it. And not once, nowhere in their documentation and the shit that they're teaching teachers and children, do they mention open source or free software?
It's not their bloody job. They're not in it to make free software important to people. They're in it to bring cheap computing, cheap, available, wide-scale computing.
Yeah, but what I'm saying to you is that they have never said that that's what they're going to do, but I'm saying maybe they should have.
It would be nice if they had, but
yeah.
If you confront them and say, why didn't you do that? They say, nah, bloody job. If you want free software to be important, free software people, better go and do some marketing.
They have built their product on open source. How about they acknowledge that?
Exactly, sir. Exactly. They have built a fortune. They've built, Evan's got an OBE or some bullshit thing from the Queen. And that's all based. Oh, I might not be in favor of the monarchy, but they've built their whole empire on Debian and free software. And yet, like, They've barely contributed back, and they just seem to, like, just not even acknowledge it, except for when they're really pressed on it, they'll say, oh yeah, we want to open source this, that, and the other. But they don't seem to have any interest in pushing the open source agenda. And that is something that all of us as a Linux community, as a free software community, certainly the podcasters, when the Raspberry Pi first came out, that's something that we thought, wow, we're going to have this Linux computer and it's getting really mainstream and we're going to have all these people using Linux. And yet they never seem to mention that. They never seem to mention open source. And call me bitter. I've been up there. I've seen a sea of Windows and Mac computers and the fucking developer of Raspbian using a Mac to do it. And it just,
I don't want to burn bridges, and I may...
I think that ship has already sailed, pal. If I'm honest, I think the bit where you said fuck the Raspberry Pi Foundation... That's going to be the headline news here.
We'll get to that bit, I'll say.
To be fair... Unfortunately, at this point, the recording cut out, and I was unable to...
That's my honest opinion, and it's politically a very bad thing to say in my position, but it's the fucking truth. Fuck them. They should be pushing the open source and free software agenda, and they're just not doing it.
I think you've really missed out, though, because their mission statement, okay, right, was basically all about educating children into computing. The guy who run it, Eben, was a BBC freak, right? So he grew up, okay, right, during the BBC era, okay, right, where, you know, BBC computers were put in schools, okay, right, people had to learn how to code BBC. But the whole point about the Raspberry Pi Foundation was bringing it back to that. He was, you know, very... vocal on the aspect, okay, that there was not enough people coming through the industry, okay, and education, okay, to actually learn more how to use computers.
No, exactly. I mean, and they have, they set out this mission and they have been accomplishing it, right? But my problem isn't with how they have delivered on their mission. My problem is with the mission itself and how they have not done what I think they should have done. And they've not included this extra bit on top of.
I think you're massively moving the goalposts, though, right? We said, what we want is you want everyone in the world using Linux, and Google went, okay, here's an Android phone, now everyone in the world uses it. Oh, no, not like that. And so the Raspberry Pi people went, okay, now we've given a tiny computer, which everyone's got five of in a drawer, and went, oh, no, not like that. What do we bloody want?
What we want is more stuff like Ubuntu, right? Which... they.
I would like to make a note that Joe Ressington just said that out loud.
Ubuntu was all
about. I've gone on fire.
Linux for human beings, right? And what Shuttleworth ploughed all his millions into, black hole, you may say, but either way, he ploughed all that money into pushing open source software. And I may disagree with Unity. I may disagree with the management of the phone situation. I may not be a huge fan of Snaps, but one thing that he has consistently done is pushed open source and free software. More open source because that's more corporate friendly, but it's essentially the same thing. But he has pushed that agenda forward, and that he must be, we must acknowledge that he has done that. Whereas the Raspberry Pi Foundation have fucking never done that.
Right. Okay. And all right, you've got like 10 seconds. Go.
Okay, that's not going to work.
In that case, if you'd like to hear Marius's essay on this, come and contact us afterwards. I am told that if we get to the bar before 11 o'clock, they'll serve you. If we go after 11 o'clock, they won't. So it's very nearly that time. So I will say thank you very much to Marius. Thank you very much to Dave. Thank you very much, especially to Joe Ressington, who organised all this. Give Joe a huge round of applause.
And can I just say... that we're going to go to another pub afterwards. I can't remember what it's called. So once they say fuck off out of here, stay outside and try and like follow people to the other pub. Because
follow the really tall people.
Yep. We will be outside. Yeah, get a drink, go, and we'll meet you outside. I've been Stuart Langridge. This has been Foss Talk Live. Thank you very much indeed, and good night.